Today's show, we prepare for the NFL draft. Great tales from draft pass. Reggie Bush gets his Heisman back. What do we think of the group of five playoff plan? And are they cheating on the double stuff Oreo?
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Instead of like shying away from that, they're literally like, just get everybody get drunk in the street.
Ross Dellinger.
Detroit Mardi Gras week. Here we are.
And SI's Pat Forty.
It's like the double stuff when that came along was a true quality of life improvement.
Here's Pat, Ross, and Dan.
I welcome the pod. We got the old NFL draft Thursday night. Right here in beautiful Detroit, Michigan. City's excited. Nothing better than having 100,000 people gather in the streets of Detroit to watch two millionaires shake hands.
Which America. Street are we gathering America. On? Is it Woodward or what street are we on down there?
All of them. They're in everywhere. All of them. Okay. I don't know. Detroit decided that they're going to show off their downtown, which has been spruced up, and there's a lot of development and stuff, and they're making it so you can't ignore it. They didn't choose to put it like Kansas City last year had out at Union Station, right. Which is like maybe like 2 miles from downtown or mile and a half something, and then that's where they do their parades. And if you've ever been to Kansas City, it's a beautiful train station. And there's a big, huge expanse of grass. Detroit is just throwing it down in like the street corner.
Just perfect.
Surface parking lot. Just let's go.
Well, why not?
Oh, can't miss our revitalized downtown. And it's just, people just going to be in gutters and like, you know, in and out of bars. And it's going to be fantastic.
God,
Coney Island.
What's going on? Is this Mardi Gras?
Hell, yes. This is Detroit's Mardi Gras.
Detroit's Mardi Gras. Detroit Mardi Gras week. Here we are.
Detroit had more NFL players last year than any city in the country. So, like, number one in something.
Right?
Number one in something. We're going to take it. Sauce Gardner is going to be our hero. Our, what is it? The king? Do you have a?
Yeah, Mardi Gras king. Yeah.
Mardi Gras king, yeah. Sauce would wear some kind of crazy coat or something. You know that.
Sure. I walked every day when I was up there for the NCAA tournament to Little Caesars Arena from my hotel. It was about a mile, a little bit more. And it was pretty good down there. Like the revitalization had gotten fairly vital. It was good.
There's
Pat
long
so
way
surprised.
To go.
He's like, it's pretty good.
Long way to go, mind you. Yeah,
I'm not sure. Well, you know.
But yes, it's come incredible. Yeah, no, it's come a long way. So it's sort of like it's like the halfway spot of the marathon, or maybe, you know, you're like, hey, so far, so good. No, they are going to make, if you're watching, I'm sure our listeners will watch. They will. So that you literally can't miss it. Right. Because that's it. This is where we're having it. Notice we have condos over here now.
Yes. Retail stores.
Yes. Look, storefronts. And actually, it's pretty good. All the little small businesses. I don't know. The draft is amazing. I've covered a lot of them. Always enjoyed them in New York because I got a free trip to New York every spring. And the draft's not really heavy lifting when it comes to journalism, if you want to call it journalism.
Until somebody shows up in a gas mask.
Yeah, Laramie Tunsil did give us. Oh my God, that was so great. That was in Chicago. They moved it out. Anyway, they moved it out of. They started to kind of realize what they had when those Jets fans were just going bananas.
Yeah.
And I've told this story, I'm sure, on the pod before, but I'm walking into Radio City Music Hall. It is a beautiful spring day at some point, and I don't know, whatever that's, wherever that street is and whatever those streets are, a little side street. Radio City Music Hall, you know, this is middle of Manhattan, and it's like 70 degrees, and everybody is out, and there is a dude in a Eagles jersey. This like definitely not a fresh one either. Like, you know, like a Jaworski, right? He's got like his Jaworski on,
and
he has a 24-ounce can of beer, and he's just standing in this middle of the street, Manhattan, chugging the beer before he goes into because he doesn't want to pay. whatever they're charging. Because the remember the draft was at noon, right? It was at noon.
Yeah.
So it's like a 10:30, 11 in the morning, and I'm just like, oh my god, I love this sport. I love these people. Now they instead of like shying away from that, they're literally like, just get everybody get drunk in the street.
Yes. Mm.
It is Mardi Gras.
It is Mardi Gras. It's Nashville. Nashville held a wild one.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Nashville didn't need the draft to get wild either.
No.
But they did.
There's just less bachelorette parties that weekend.
Yeah. The little bachelorette wagon things couldn't get around as easily. But no, Cleveland had one that was really good, right?
Yeah,
I
mean, Philly.
Philly, yeah.
They did two in Chicago, Vegas. And they were still doing them in a theater. And then they moved to Philly, and Philly changed the game. They put it out in a park, and all of a sudden, 60, 70,000 people showed up. And now it's like, how can we do it bigger and bigger? So,
And in Dallas? Wasn't it in Dallas one year, I feel like?
They do that.
Like it was in Jerry World.
Yeah, see, they would. Dallas would screw it up because Jerry. It'd have to be about Jerry.
Yeah,
I think it was. I don't remember what year that would have been. 18, maybe.
I don't know where they did it in Dallas. I forget that one.
I think it was. Yeah.
This is, I think, genius NFL knowing your audience and knowing, you know, like nobody's hungrier than those upper Midwest, Northeast cities for football all the time, and especially like Cleveland, Chicago, where you haven't won much recently. Now Detroit, they've won a little bit, but
1 year,
I mean, those people put a draft in their city. It's going to be phenomenal.
Yeah, because there's more excitement. There is more excitement in Detroit for this draft than there was in Los Angeles when they had the Super Bowl. Right. I mean, like it's just everyone's fired up. And so this is, they did have a Super Bowl. City was really down then. Back in 2006, when they had the Super Bowl in Detroit, Detroit was so light. It was a disaster, right? And they, Roger Penske, you know, the trucking magnet and big in auto racing, he spent like millions, he and others, but he was the lead. They took abandoned buildings and wrapped them up to make it look like they're being built, worked on, but they weren't.
Oh boy.
They put fake storefronts up to make it look like the city was occupied to try.
Oh my.
Like just at least they don't have to do that anymore. That's America. American success story, Detroit, Michigan. Now it's going to be great. You got to have a little grit. You got to have a little soul. You don't need some fancy schmancy Jerry World. We're just going to drink on the side of Woodward and Randolph or something, you know?
It was in Jerry World, 2018, by the way. Yeah. It was in Jerry
really?
World.
Really? Okay.
I think I covered those two, the Jerry World in Philly the year before.
Philly was great. Yeah. They just came out of the neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And because that park was surrounded by neighborhoods. So it's literally like, hey, man, NFL draft's like halfway down the block. Let's grab a, let's grab a 12 and go, right? It's terrific.
Eagles fans. Oh, that's red meat for them.
Yeah, fly Eagles, fly, man. So
yeah, if you're a media member, I learned at that draft, the Philly draft, man, it stinks covering the draft. I mean, you're back like behind the stage, you don't see anything.
You're in a tent.
You know, you're watching on TV. Yeah, we were in a tent in Philly.
It was like some kind of museum or some kind of building. Yeah,
it wasn't great. Dan, I have something to admit. I hate the draft.
Really?
Sorry.
I hate the draft.
Are you a communist? A communist?
It's just not. It's not my thing. You know, just tell me where they go. It's like recruiting. Like, just tell me where they go, when they're going to play, when the game kicks off. I'm not.
I would like to see the draft not be like 4 days long, personally.
God, I know.
You know.
You know, like you don't have to watch. You do know that. Yeah.
No, I don't. Believe me, you'll find out on Thursday night when we do our pod. I won't know. I'm not watching, Dan. Thank you for giving me permission.
I love it.
Make sure you tune in.
Thursday, the post-draft show, it's already getting good.
Well, normally there's at least 1 to 3 intoxicated people on the pod.
Mm. Yes. Minimum of 1, maximum of 3.
Yeah.
But yeah, today's show may suck, but check us out Friday morning after the draft. It'll be good.
It is a weird vent. The Laramie Tunzel story was probably it's among my all-time greatest drafts. Johnny Manziel dropping was pretty fun too. There's some, you know, I'm there for none of the positives. Like, what a heartwarming tale. A good guy like Trevor Lawrence worked hard and became the number one pick. You know, no. If you don't recall, Laramie Tunsil, Ole Miss, and there were all the, was it the day of that they came out with the accusations that some assistant coach at Ole Miss was paying his rent, or, you know, I don't know. It was
during the draft, I think.
Somebody was trying to frame him with NCAA violations. Well, the NFL could care less about that. But then they released a picture of him, right, in a in a gas mask.
Gas mask, yeah.
Perhaps smoking pot.
Something.
A few hours before the draft, right?
Like during it was during the draft.
Oh, it's, yeah, that's right. It was during.
Look, during it. Everyone's like, is that real? I'm there in Chicago. Is that what? Oh, my God. And he was there. It was great. Yeah. The mask was not.
Oh, that's
But no, it was like a spurned agent who had access to Tunsil's phone or some pictures of him or whatever, and just was absolutely murdering him during the draft. And then he had to answer questions about it immediately after.
He came into the press room. We're like, and he gets up there, and it's like, normally it's like, wow, I'm really happy to go to, I don't remember where he went. I can't
Miami,
remember.
Miami, I think.
Miami, yeah. You know, I'm just, boy, they got great tradition down there. It's the same stuff, right? And everyone's like, you know, there was a picture of you with a gas smoking something and a gas mask.
I hadn't seen the photo in a while. I Googled it. You should Google it, too.
It is fantastic.
It is hysterical. And it also, when you type in Laramie Tunz, I get halfway through his name. The first thing up on Google suggestion is Laramie Tunzel gas mask, of course. Yeah.
Well,
we did a pod that night, Dan. It was one of our better shows.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I was like, you got anything for me there? You know, the beauty of it is, I mean, think about this, right? This is how far we've come. So they were trying to get his draft stock to drop because an assistant coach may or may not have been paying him, or he wanted rent. And then B, that he was choosing to smoke weed, which I don't know how many states it's legal. And then beautifully, embarrassing as it was, and I felt bad for him that night because I was like, this is a bunch of nothing. I mean, like, really? This is it? He has gotten the last laugh. He just signed a new 3-year, $75 million extension. So whatever the framing agent was, I hope he's Laramie Tunzel laughs last, and good for him because he didn't deserve that. But man, what a scandal. It wasn't even a scandal. It was fun. And I saw David Ha, the Chicago Tribune columnist, and now he does radio in Chicago. Great writer. He was still writing then. And he's like, I have to write about the Bears. I'm so jealous. I can't write a column about Laramie Tunsil. I was like, ha. Anyway, good for Laramie and bad on all the people trying to frame him. Well, you can't get framed for taking money from people anymore in college. At least we got that out of the way. As the transfer portal may or may not be proving. Still got a few. We'll go through a couple in the last 2 days. Most interesting one, Dylan Edwards, who had a nice freshman year, is a big recruit, high school recruit for Coach Prime at Colorado. He's out. Transferred out. Kind of a shocker. He seemed to be kind of in that. We have absolutely no idea, but there's so much media out there. It felt like he was kind of in that inner circle of like Coach Prime's dogs. But he had brought in
pieces of Louis.
Dallin Hayden. Yeah, he was a Louis.
He was a Louis.
They had brought in a Ohio State running back, and I don't know what happened, but Edwards is out. I'm interested to see if he goes back to Kansas or Kansas State or where he's headed. I don't know.
21st player to enter the portal from Colorado, by the way, this spring.
In this spring alone?
21, yeah.
But, yeah, he was one that, like, you know, Prime had said, I'd seen him since he was a kid growing up. I've known him, you know. I mean, that was one, you know, if Travis Hunter is basically an extended family member, Dylan Edwards probably would have been considered in the same category, too. But sometimes Louis in, Louis out, and he's moving on. They, you know, they do not win that first game against TCU without Dylan Edwards being great in his first college game and really kind of springboarding all the attention and the hoopla. You know, that game went a long way towards making Colorado a September sensation last year. So it is pretty startling to see somebody like that hit the portal.
It is. He was incredible in that season opener. It was fun to watch him run and catch. I mean, he had like, I don't know, 40 receptions last year as well.
He's once heavily involved with K-State. I think maybe even committed. I don't know. He committed to Notre Dame too.
I think he did commit to Notre Dame. Then he flipped to Colorado. That was a big story when that happened. Yeah, last year.
These things are like seventh grade relationships at this point. It's like,
I know.
So and so and so and so. Yeah, they went out for 2 days and they broke up. Yeah. now he's dating her best friend, but they're gonna break up by Thursday.
Sat with her at lunch one day.
Who knows what's going on?
With a different person.
The other somewhat interesting, Deacon Hill, quarterback at Iowa, is out. He's leaving. I kind of always felt a little bad for Deacon Hill. I don't want to say that because it's not really, I don't want to say anything negative about the players, but he was in a tough situation. Deacon Hill was transferring to like Fordham, and then Iowa jumped in, and then he goes to Iowa to be Cade McNamara's backup, presumably, and then Cade McNamara gets hurt, and Deacon Hill has to take over an offense. This is not a great quarterback, obviously, or didn't have this prolific expectations. And he had to take over an offense that had zero, like no wideouts.
Well, it had nothing. It had
and
no
then
anything.
Eric All got hurt, and they didn't even really have tight ends.
Yeah, that's all they had is a tight end. Yeah.
And at least all the heat went to Brian Ferentz and Kirk, but anyway.
Yeah, his numbers are not. There's more to be desired from Iowa's overall offensive numbers, but yeah, he completed less than 50% of his passes, had more interceptions than touchdowns.
Looking for more production.
One, yeah, like the Titanic is headed toward the iceberg, and somebody grabs Deacon Hill and said, "Here, take the wheel, steer us to safety," and you hit the iceberg.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. So he's out. The interesting part is at this point, Iowa has two quarterbacks. Cade McNamara and redshirt freshman Marco Lane, as I think it is.
So they have certainly they have people coming in. And
according to one of the Iowa sites, they have two guys.
Good Lord.
So if you happen to be a quarterback somewhere and you're looking to maybe play in the Big Ten, you too could be Deacon Hill.
If you're a quarterback and looking to play in the Big Ten, you want to play in a competent offense, you might not want to.
I don't know.
Although at least Brian Ferentz is no longer dialing up the plays.
You know, the thing is, you know who really one of the most amazing developments of 2023 is, generally speaking, we talk about the state of Iowa. We would talk about Ames Tapwater. Iowa and Iowa State fans having a beer collective battle.
The lake.
Their love of Bush
Lake
Light,
Okoboji.
Punting. Yes, the wild lake they all party on. All this stuff. And, we love it. We love Iowa. Punches way above its weight in terms of entertainment.
Loose meat sandwiches.
Loose meat sandwiches. That big pork thing they put on bread. It's just a great place. The butter, whatever, the butter cow. Caucus. Got a caucus, man. You caucusing tonight? Love Iowa, but you have like fun with Iowa, right? They're fun loving people. You have fun with the Iowas, and then Caitlin Clark came along, gave them unbelievable credibility.
Yeah,
if you knew nothing else about Iowa other than Caitlin Clark, you'd be like, oh wow, Iowa, what an impressive place. They produce Caitlin Clark. It's like no, it's 3 million nutcases and Caitlin Clark. They run around with the shirts that say punt on it.
Punting is winning.
Punting is winning. Yeah. Caitlin Clark has changed other people's perception. We still know the real you, Iowa. You're not fooling us. CC is gone. She's in Indiana now. We know. Now you're right back down to where you were. All right, look, breaking news here. I'd like to announce we're going to award the 2005 Heisman Trophy back to Reggie Bush. Reggie Bush is back in the Heisman house. He got a little evicted there for a minute. 2010, the Heisman Trust, I put that in quotes, made him forfeit his trophy for receiving improper benefits while at USC, and that the NCAA had ruled him ineligible. I don't like the word improper. NCAA
permissible.
Yeah, NCAA permissible.
Yeah.
Someone letting your parents live in a house for free is not improper. It's damn.
It's good cruton, Dan. It's
that's
good
what
cruton.
I call it. It's a good cruton. It's just good. Hey, here's a house. All right. That's not improper. That's fantastic. Now, I'm going to Pete Thamel with this story. I don't mean to make fun of Pete. He's just using the length, the verbiage. Pete with the scoop. Good job, Pete. He did receive a ton of stuff, and here's a quote. Personally, I'm thrilled to reunite with my fellow Heisman winners and be part of the storied legacy of the Heisman Trophy. Thoughts, Pat?
Good. Should have been. Probably never should have been had it stripped from him at the time. You know, it probably seemed like the thing to do given his ineligibility, but it was an overreach, an overreaction, especially like when O.J. Simpson kept his Heisman. Come on. Let's
why did something happen with OJ?
Yeah. In terms of bringing negative publicity onto the Heisman Trophy, I think OJ would have ranked ahead of Reggie there.
It was acquitted, but, Pat.
Yeah. Yes, he was acquitted. He was acquitted. Let's remember
what
that.
What are you gonna do, man?
But here's the problem with the Heisman Trophy. You know, it's a great award, and people really do care about it for reasons that are a little bit kind of unknown. Not really unknown, but curious. Anyway, the it's become, to a degree, like the Nobel Peace Prize. Like, you're supposed to be this person of exalted character, when really just be, are you the best football player in college football or not? And so there's been kind of this almost mystical character attribute attached to it that never really should have been there, and I think was probably misapplied to Reggie Bush in his situation, and he should be the Heisman winner. He was incredible that season. You guys remember it. I mean, absolutely electrifying and on a great team. He was the most exciting player, certainly, in college football that year, and even though Vince Young, you could argue, was every bit as good and would have been a deserving winner as well. But to take it away was an overreaction. And I'm sorry it took 14 years to correct that, but I'm glad it's being corrected now. You don't have to, you know, stand stubbornly on principles, a misguided principle forever.
Yeah, I always thought it was odd the way the Heisman approached players who were, like, you know, deemed ineligible or violation of rules, because like the longstanding AP poll, right, doesn't take those things into account as much through the years and crowns champions, even if they were on sanctioned or stuff. So if you're the best player, you're the best player. And even if it means you were at that school because you got some inducements or whatever, it doesn't matter. It doesn't change the fact that you're the best player. And so this always made sense that it was going to happen. And you felt I remember writing this in July 2021, when NIL became a thing and started. I remember one of the things, obviously this was one of the things, the momentum started then to get Reggie Bush back his Heisman. And you felt the momentum grow, especially the last year. And now, boom, here we are.
So I agree. I think if it was performance enhancing drugs or something,
yeah,
like that,
right? Different story.
maybe that's a different story, or there was some, I don't what other nefarious conduct that could rig the Heisman, like changing your name from Joe Theismann to Joe Theismann.
He didn't win.
Yeah, he didn't. It was a good effort, though.
Yeah, tried.
I mean, if you don't, Joe Theismann, famous quarterback, obviously, especially in the NFL, was at Notre Dame, and he used to pronounce his name, Joe Theismann. And as part of the Heisman campaign, they changed the saying of his name. I mean, this is a prominent individual.
Oh, yeah. That was Roger Valdeseri, the longtime SID. Great SID.
The greatest SID.
Yes, the greatest moment in SID history. Convinced the quarterback to change his name to rhyme with Heisman.
Wow.
Yeah.
The things people do for the Heisman campaigns, huh?
Don't tell me about Oregon buying a billboard in Times Square and be like, this is ridiculous. Like,
they got nothing on old Joe.
How about the Theismans? I don't know where Joe Theismann was from, but like you're like his uncle and you're like, hey, Freddie, I thought you said your nephew, Joe Theismann, was in Notre Dame. It is. That's him. That's him. They say it's Theismann. Come on, man. You're lying. Greatest bit ever. Roger Valdeseri has got, he's like the legendary SID, all the gimmicks. Why Notre Dame would win all the things. That and they'd get the New York writers like drunk right before the ballot. I think he'd go to New York and get all the New York writers. It's back when
New Jersey is where Joe Theismann is from.
Yeah, there's people in Jersey like, I swear I'm related to that guy. You're going to change? Does everyone have to change their name to Theismann then? No, seriously, that's my second cousin. That's my cousin, man. Little Joey. I agree. I'll play devil's advocate. Okay, I'm playing devil's advocate here. There were rules. Like, I don't know where this goes, right? Like, are we just going to – is Louisville going to get their basketball thing back? Is the Fab Five going to get their banners back? I don't know.
This one's different, though, because it's individual. I agree with you. I know what you're about to say. But I feel like this one's different, though, because it's an individual.
But there were rules.
Yeah.
Okay, again, devil's advocate. Oh, yeah. There were rules. Yeah. And – presumably the others were following the rules. Now I think we know they probably weren't, but presumably they were following the rules, and the NCAA determined that Reggie and his family were not. So does that matter? Or do we just now look and go, it's like letting the guy, like they used to arrest people. We talk about marijuana earlier, like they'd arrest people with like one thing, right? Now it's like, okay, let him out. He doesn't.
Right.
Stupid. I don't know.
I tweeted this while we were talking about it. The first comment, now do U of L's 2013 championship. So,
yeah, there you go.
There's going to be a lot of people who want some revision on things. The thing is, to Ross's point, this is an individual award, and I have no problem with him getting it back, frankly.
Yeah, he was awesome. Speaking of OJ, I wonder if this played a role. This probably was en route for a while because everyone's been screaming about Reggie getting his Heisman back. And I think the thing about Reggie Bush, he's everything the Heisman is supposed to be in terms of on field and all that. And I wrote a lot about Reggie at the time, and I've met him since. First off, I would never have let the Heisman people come get my trophy. I couldn't believe he gave it to him. He sent it to him. You want your trophy? Like, what is this? Like, you send the sheriff's department?
How did that
department?
Go down? I wonder how that. Can you ship us your trophy, please? Here's a postmarked box.
Yeah. Did the Heisman Trust say they would pay for the shipping at least?
Oh yeah, fell and broke. I mean, I would not allow anybody to take my Heisman back. I'd be like, no.
You would have barricaded yourself in your house.
I mean, are they gonna call the sheriff's department? Like, is L.A. Sheriff, I don't know where Reggie lives. Let's say he lives in L.A. Is the L.A. County Sheriff's going to like, all right, we got to get the Heisman back from Reggie. Like, those cops are going to be like, dude, can I get an autograph pick? Sorry, he wasn't there. I looked, searched the house and see it. Anyway, Reggie Bush winning, like, there's a lot of people that have won the Heisman that did, you look back and you're like, what is that? Reggie Bush was the Heisman because he was so exciting. And he was so much fun to watch. Those teams were so big time, and he's like, there was no doubt this guy's unbelievable. Immortalize him. like put them down with all the greats. And so I think that's kind of part of it is like, how the heck do you take this away from them if it's not performance enhancing? So how about the Heisman House Nissan commercials this year?
Oh, they're boy, they have a new plot line.
They better.
Yeah.
They better. Reggie moving back in and all the guys like, oh, I don't know what, you're behind on your rent. Oh, yeah, I mean, that, I can, I'll write your campaign, Nissan.
Yeah,
call
there's
me.
A number of ways they could go with that. I'm sure they can be very creative with that.
You're behind on your chores. I'd do the whole season on this.
Yeah, yeah.
Tebow. Like, yeah. Anyway, great.
I don't know how much say the Heisman has in the commercials. Right, because
yes, well,
you could see them stepping in and be like, look, guys, don't make us look like complete asses.
Well, probably right. Because
they're
licensing
and that's a group
the name.
That I think tends to take itself rather seriously.
You think so? They call themselves the Heisman Trophy Trust.
I know. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
This is weird. We're discussing this, but we discussed OJ got name dropped earlier. So when OJ died a couple weeks ago, the Heisman Trophy put out a tweet, which I think they do for every Heisman winner that passes away, and the tweet had a picture of OJ, and it said the Heisman Trophy Trust mourns the passing of the 1968 Heisman Trophy winner OJ Simpson. We extend our sympathy to his family. And that's it. They got dragged for that. I mean, okay, I think you do that for every single one, and I'm guessing the social media intern was like, oh, let's call this one up.
Were they waiting for OJ to die to do this Bush thing? What's going on there?
I don't know.
Well,
but there were 3,000 comments.
The reaction to
the reaction impacted the decision.
Yeah, like, you know what? Yeah,
well, that's pretty fascinating.
Besides, I mean, the comments below are I mean, they're everywhere.
Oh, they're incredible. Yeah,
yeah. But so OJ is cool, but Reggie Bush and Jameis Winston aren't. Wild times. Jameis Winston have to give his Heisman back?
No.
Oh, did he win a Heisman? Yeah, did he?
Yeah, he won.
Yeah, okay.
He won as a redshirt freshman, 2013.
Reggie Bush couldn't be reached for comment. Give Reggie back. I mean, it's everyone's all over. But I don't know. Yeah, why is Jameis Winston getting dragged into this? Anyway.
Really, look, like if we want to go back again, comportment and NCAA rules compliance. Ooh, Johnny Manziel. Probably, you know, who knows, 50 others. Come on. Paul Hornung was like gambling.
It's like putting that where they do the like morality tax on the Baseball Hall of Fame. Like it's a museum. Yeah. It's a museum about the game. Why do they have to be like, who cares? This happened. Reggie Bush was one of the most exciting players. So anyway, good for Reggie. He is back. All right. We'll be back after this break. All right, so we'll analyze the draft picks, the quarterbacks, all the different stuff after the we are unmockable here, so we're not going to get wrapped up in a mock draft. We'll do all that after the draft, who we think should go where.
We'll retroactively savage everyone's decisions.
Understand that most of these picks are not going to pan out, or many of these picks. Couple of things. I was reading an Adam Schefter story. He had some great notes and trivia at the end of his report from this is courtesy of Adam Schefter. Interesting bit. Marvin Harrison Jr. of course will be top 10, perhaps top 5 pick. Great wideout, Marv. We love him. One of those guys. I'm just like, whoever he gets, this guy will be good. I don't care where you pick him. Like chances of Marvin Harrison Jr. being a bust to me is like 1%. Ohio, he could have if you're betting rookies of the year and you care about where they went to school, he might be a good pick for the 2024 Offensive Rookie of the Year. If you look, since 2016, these are the Ohio State Buckeyes winning Rookie of the Year. 2016, Joey Bosa, Defensive Rookie of the Year. 2017, Marshawn Lattimore, Defensive Rookie of the Year. 2019, Nick Bosa, Defensive Rookie of the Year. 2020, Chase Young, Defensive Rookie of the Year. 2022, Offensive Rookie of the Year, Garrett Wilson. 2023, Offensive Rookie of the Year, C.J. Stroud.
That's incredible. Also, zero national championships in that time.
We're trying to be positive here, Pat.
Are we? Are we really? Are we?
Say something nice about the Buckeyes.
They have a lot of very good players who are ready to go to the NFL.
If you win three straight off NFL Rookie of the Years and you went 0-3 against Michigan, that's a tough one to work out. It's like someday they're going to be like, wait, you had C.J. Stroud, Garrett Wilson, and Marvin Harrison Jr., plus like Chris Olave and Smith and Jigba, everybody else. Interesting, it was defense, and now you see the Ryan Day influence, right? Offense. I don't know. Pretty amazing. All right, here's a good trivia question. Marvin Harrison Jr. will become the fifth son of an NFL Hall of Famer to be a first-round pick. Obviously, Marvin Harrison Sr., incredible player, particularly with the Colts. I'm just going to – can you name any of them? And go ahead and make a – try to name one or two of them. You're not going to get them I don't think.
Well, I'm going to assume Archie Manning's in the Hall of Fame, so I'd say Peyton and Eli are two of them.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one. Yeah.
Wait a minute. I don't know that he is. Well,
Archie Manning?
It's not. That is not an answer.
Hmm.
Okay.
In the let me see. That is not an answer in the Adam Schefter bit.
Hmm.
College football.
Wow. Okay.
Oh.
He really wasn't that good. And those Saints teams were terrible. No, well, not
Saints
an answer.
Were terrible, but it
Saints
wasn't
teams
his
were
fault.
Bad.
Yeah. Any other picks?
All right. Now I got to recalibrate. I got to rethink. Hang on.
Didn't the Bosa's brothers play? The Bosa brothers' dad play?
Nope, not a Hall of Famer.
He was not a
Hall
of Famer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'll give you, I think, a tougher one.
Okay.
Jake Matthews, son of Bruce Matthews.
Yeah. That family was unbelievable. Like, Clay Matthews also in that family.
Yeah.
Wow. That's
all
a
right.
Good one.
I can't believe there's five. That's crazy.
Well, one has two. Howie Long.
Chris Long.
Chris Long and Kyle Long.
Kyle Long, yeah.
And then the last
they were both
one.
Both first round picks?
Huh. Yeah. And then the last one is turned unfortunate, but Kellen Winslow and Kellen Winslow 2. Kellen Winslow 2 is. Let's just say I covered his legal situation and proceedings in San Diego.
Mm.
Not safe for work.
You
can read my riveting columns, I'm sure, on Yahoo Sports, unless they've been deleted as we changed servers and stuff.
Oh, okay.
It was good at the time. Georgia offensive tackle Amarius Mims has an 86 3/4 inch wingspan. Set the NFL record largest wingspan ever measured at the combine.
Wow.
How long is this thing? Only
86 is longer than 7 feet.
Only a quarter inch smaller than Giannis.
That's amazing.
Good Lord.
Wow. Yeah.
Giannis is 87. So he's basically, I mean, hello. Yeah.
Seven footer who weighs 340.
Whew. And then USC coach Lincoln Riley has a chance to set all-time college football record here. He will be the first college coach, presuming the mock drafts are correct, and Caleb Williams goes to the Bears number one. He will be the first coach to ever coach 3 number one overall picks. Caleb Williams, Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield.
Yeah. All in, like, you know, relatively, that's within
like
7 years.
Astounding, right?
6 years, yeah.
I would have thought that would have been, like, I don't know. He's still young. I don't know who I thought would have had that record, but that is impressive to do it that quickly.
Steve Spurrier or something, you know.
Yeah, like a John McKay. I don't know, one of these guys that, like, were around. Right. Yeah. Three. So that has got to be pretty impressive on the recruiting trail.
I think it's worked to his
advantage.
That's
helpful.
Yeah,
besides all the Heismans, they all won Heisman too. Heisman House. Yeah. Anyway. All right. We'll get into this story quickly. CBS Sports reporting that a group led by Derek Dooley former college football coach, Tennessee is probably most famous at, is pitching a group of five playoff. This is Dennis Dodd. A group of five playoff that is backed by a, quote, private equity group. The concept would address, if not be motivated by, disappointment felt by a group of five conferences, the MAC, Mountain West, Sun Belt, American Conference USA, over revenue distribution under the new college football playoff. They're saying they could make some money by having their own playoff. While Dooley's idea is in developmental stage, sources stress that the financial involvement will be more than just funding a playoff. In one iteration of the proposal, eight division champs would play at the end of the regular season for the group of five's guaranteed college football berth. Significant dollars would be at stake. So, and this, you could either have your own playoff and get out of the main playoff, which seems ridiculous. Why would you do that? Or you could have all these guys team up and have basically a play-in tournament. Ross, thoughts?
I'm here at CFP meetings. Actually, there's spring meetings in Dallas, it was kind of buzzing a little bit yesterday at meetings. But this has been building for, I would say, several months, if not years. You remember, maybe 6 to 8 years ago, there was a movement from the group of fives to maybe play their own kind of tournament, their own playoff, and then it kind of failed. I think this is just like the Super League, Dan, as we discussed a few weeks back. It is a pretty incredible long shot. It's much like the Super League, right? They're blowing up television deals and conferences and reorganizing everything. I think that it's incredibly unlikely that to happen, that portion of it. However, and I wrote this in a CFP kind of behind the scenes story earlier this week about a G5 playoff and how some momentum is building for it. I think we talked a couple months ago. I had a story about the G5 and how the gap is growing, but with NIL is growing the gap between the G5 and the P4. And G5 folks are really, coaches, administrators are really starting to think seriously about their own playoffs. So I think a segment of this proposal is more doable, right? Which is maybe some kind of four-team playoff. And I've written this that you could take four, you know, three bowls, two bowl games could be the semis, and then one could serve as like your G5 championship game, and then that champion advances on, right, to the CFP spot, and you use those three bowl games as a separate package potentially for the G5 to get more money, because this goes back to, right, what I wrote about earlier this week in this behind the scenes story of the CFP about how the money distribution came to be and how little the G5 is getting compared to what they expected. Right, had a group of five president, Jack Hawkins at Troy, who's on the CFP board of managers, tell me for that story. We had planned to get 2 years ago when the proposal came up before the alliance didn't support it. We had planned to get $225 million per year. The group of five, this new deal, $115 million. So they went from getting about $3 million per school a year from the CFP to getting about 1.7, 1.8 million. And I think a group of five playoff, the hope is maybe something like that can infuse a little more revenue. But blowing everything up, Dan, you know, destroying conferences and all this stuff, while it does make sense geographically, right, it's really hard to do, just like the Super League stuff. So I think maybe a small portion of this is more likely to happen.
So, yeah, the Camellia Bowl champion meets the Potato Bowl champion in the Boca Raton Bowl for the right to be the 12th seed in the playoff. Is that what we're
there? You go,
at?
Bingo.
Yeah, great. Hey, look, Tennessee fans would be interested, if not alarmed, to hear that Derek Dooley's got the big ideas here. And once again, private equity rearing its head, perhaps not in the wisest of fashion. Look, when would all this happen? You'd have to back up the group of five seasons. They'd play like a 10-game regular season. They would have no championship game of their own. Then they would play a bowl game here and a bowl game there, and then they play another bowl game, and then the team would go play another game, bowl game, or another game as a 12 seed. Like, You're going to tell all these teams, well, guess what? You know what? We're now having a 10-game regular season, so that's one less home game at least for you. You're not going to get the revenue from that. And then only one of our teams, or maybe two, is going to make this alleged playoff. And so most of the rest of y'all are just going to sit around at home from November 12th until your bowl game, if you're lucky enough to get in one. There are just way too many logistical problems, I think, for this to happen. I get the frustration, the, you know, continued marginalizing, being angry at that. But now you've got a chance already right now in the playoff. You've got a guaranteed spot. I let it happen as opposed to trying to blow up everything now before you even see how it works out.
Logistics here are just a nightmare. I don't know how you make it work. I think there's also, I don't know. We're weird. You know, we're a little too into it. But like, I kind of get into like the Mountain West chase and all that. Like, winning your conference still matter, I guess. You'd have to be able to. So look, if you do, you know, whether you do bowl sites or you control your neutral sites or whatever you're doing, I can't see this thing, which was like 10 games. First off, nobody's going to care about like the first round at all. I think you take five, group of five, you have your top four, and you could have two games on Thanksgiving weekend and then the group of five championship game on championship weekend, right? So you wouldn't have to shorten the season too much.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You could move up to week zero. There are some ways to not – to still play 12 games, but you would have to probably eliminate conference championship games, which, by the way, I'm not so sure conference championship games at the group of five level really are worthwhile from a value standpoint.
This would seemingly be bigger, right? And I would watch. I would be excited. This would be really cool as a viewer who is not attached to one of these teams. That said, you would then... like you'd have to have like a flex deal. Like, okay, let's say you're Boise State and you're supposed to finish your final game of the year is against Utah State or something like that. And then I don't know who Boise State's rival is, probably the issue, but then you qualify for the championship game. Then Utah State loses a game and everyone else just still plays on Thanksgiving weekend. We've seen this with like sometimes those rivalries are the only game that really draws. We've seen it in the MAC where the MAC is taking some of their end of the season rivalry games and moving them earlier in the season off of the ESPN midweek because like Central Michigan and Western Michigan will get a pretty good gate when they play each other, but not on a Tuesday night, right? So you move that game to like October 8th on a Saturday, they're going to get a nice crowd. Bowling Green and Toledo, they're going to get a nice crowd no matter what. But if you play on a wet, so you kind of, you lose that. I don't know. I think it's the option to me would be four teams, three games, Thanksgiving weekend, and you do it. I think it would be very exciting. Now, I also think I would let this cook a little bit because I think when Boise State is got a shot at making the play, you know, whatever, the Mountain West champ could make it or the American champ could make it. And they're both playing their championship games on that championship weekend, which, you know, there is a lot of, there is need for inventory, as they say. I think those ratings are going to go up too. So I don't know. I don't hate it. I just don't know how you logistically do it.
Well, the
you try to preserve the sanctity of the MAC championship game.
Yeah.
No, I think, first of all, like to your point, let it cook a little bit. Let your playoff, your 12-team playoff that everybody wants to tear apart before it ever happens. Let's see it happen. To your point, yeah, there's going to be showdowns at the end. Oh, my gosh, is Tulane going to get in or is Boise going to get in? You know, San Diego State or James Madison? You know, and you know, I just think that you get your, we're fixing something before we've even seen whether it works.
Yeah, well, Pat's got a point because these G5 conference championship games, they do turn into, you know, a play-in games for somebody, right? There's going to be a play-in game or two on that weekend. So I think that's a good point, and that's probably a big deterrent here from this happening, preventing this to happen, is the fact that you've got the G5 has got an access spot now. You know, if they didn't have an access spot, man, you might see this happening more likely to happen, you know, but now that you have an access spot. But here is the thing about that access spot. And again, it goes back to money and revenue. In the new deal that starts in 2026, you will not get, there will be no participation bonuses for that access spot. And that's important for the G5 and its athletic departments. So right now, under the current deal, there are participation bonuses. Each team that qualifies for the CFP gets, I believe, $4 million. So these next 2 years under the old deal, the G5 team will get $4 million when they qualify, and that will stop in 2026.
Well, listen, Derek Dooley's on the case. He's a smart guy, maybe not the best football coach, but he's a smart guy. I always found him smart. Anyway, that's where we're at. All right, we got a people's court here. Story out of Texas, federal court. One man is spearheading the fight against what he considers false advertising on his beer pour. Shane Waldrop, the lead plaintiff in this case, he went to the movies. The movie theater was owned by Cinemark. He ordered a 24-ounce beer from a Texas Cinemark theater on Valentine's Day. Oh, romantic, Shane. Hey, honey, I'll take you to the movies, and I'm going to get absolutely sloshed.
I'm getting a jumbo beer, baby.
Here's your flowers.
Go to the bathroom midway through the
movie. I'll get a Barbie movie, and I'm going to get... Well, he was so into his beer, he should have been more into his date, apparently. He observed that the 24-ounce can container did not seem large enough to hold 24 ounces of liquid. Waldrop took the container home and did his own scientific experiment, and he found it only held 22 ounces.
Wow. Short 2 ounces. Look at there.
Federal lawsuit. This lawsuit is another example of consumers unwittingly overpaying for a supposed benefit they are not receiving, Jarrett Elsley, one of Waldrop's attorney, told CNN in a statement. While 2 ounces may seem inconsequential to the seller, the bottom line is the buyer is not getting what he was promised by the seller. He also just needed that little extra couple ounces of booze in him. Oh, yeah. CNN did not independently verify the size of Cinemark's 24. Come on, CNN, get after it. What kind of journalism is dead?
It is. It's not hard to go to the Cinemark and order a beer and see what it is.
That's a great job.
Yeah.
What is your job today? I got to go buy some beer, see if they're 24 ounces or not. You got to go with the Busch Light Biggin, the big one that has one extra ounce, the 25 ouncer. One extra. They know what they're doing at Busch. Busch Light, one extra ounce. 24 is not enough. You need 25. Anyway, thoughts on this this lawsuit? It seems like we could solve this very quickly.
I stand wholeheartedly with the plaintiff. Shane Waldrop, pod hero, standing up for the right to get the beer you pay for. And I will admit, I have been skeptical on a few occasions of, you know, when they say you're getting a 22-ounce beer or something somewhere, like, comes, it's like, I don't think so. I've wanted to do what Shane Waldrop did. I haven't had the follow-through, the, you know, the energy, the commitment, the commitment to the cause that he did. So I'm wholeheartedly with him. He's my hero, and I hope he gets every penny from Cinemark that he can get.
Mm-hmm. I love not having a whole lot going on in your life, and you're just like, you know what? I'm going to drink this beer, and then I'm going to bring it empty home and measure to see how many ounces that fits in there. Well, I mean, wow. But you know what? Good for him. And yes, I'm same as Pat. If we pay for 24 ounces of beer, we need to get 24 ounces of beer.
Damn straight. So this is I'm down a rabbit hole here. This is the trend of shrinkflation, they're calling it.
Ah, yes. Yeah.
Shrinkflation. Have you heard of this?
Yes. Yeah. Liz, so my wife was covering things. We started talking about this last year. She told me what she informed me what shrinkflation is. It is happening across the country, Dan.
It is. I have a congressional report from Senator Casey in Pennsylvania. Senator Casey is on the side of the people.
Shocking.
I don't know anything about Senator Casey. Literally didn't know existed until right now.
I was going to say, is he up for re-election?
Yeah. Oh, all right. I don't mean to get political. I'm not telling you who to vote for. I don't know anything about
that. You already brought politics into this, Dan.
I don't even know if he's a dude. Now. Sorry. I don't even know if it's a guy. I got no idea. It says casey.senate.gov. Okay? So, nonpartisan endorsement. But do you know, I'm reading his report or her report. It's a he, right? It's a he. Senators. I'm reading the senator's report. The Cocoa Puff. The Cocoa Puffs. I think we're familiar with their work. 2021, the General Mills dropped the size of its family size offering for the Cocoa Puff from 19.3 ounces to 18.1 ounces. So if you just are like every day you go through the grocery and you see family size, you grab your Cocoa Puff, you're down 6%. There's 6% less Cocoa Puff in your box.
But that price didn't go down 6%.
Heck,
no.
It probably went up.
No, we're getting killed at the grocery store.
Oh yeah,
6% less Cocoa Puffs. How are the people supposed to deal with this?
When was this report from Senator Bob Casey? When did he say all this?
It's Bob. Okay. Sorry, Bob Casey. Senator Casey. Yeah, right. Senator Bob Casey. Supposedly I should know you, but I don't. But I can name like four offensive coordinators in the MAC. So I really have prioritized my life. December 2023. The Dorito bag. Yeah. The Dorito bag.
He's up for re-election, by the way. Yes.
Okay. Well, vote as you will. It's not
Dorito
the one
bag's
that,
infamous
Fetterman. I know him. He wears like shorts to the Senate. I love that. Anyway, I don't know. I'm going to get murdered in the comments for even talking about these people, but whatever. This is a bipartisan issue. Everybody likes Dorito nacho cheese, 9.75 ounces in 2021. Now it's 9.25 ounces. Your little bag. You think you're getting the same bag? You're not. Family size Wheat Thins, 16 ounces to 14 ounces. And what I think is the biggest one, because this really took some work. It didn't just read the labels. Here's a New York Post story on this. Oreo fans claim company is skimping on the cream filling in the latest shrinkflation scam. Louisiana resident Shane Ranzanet said he told the Wall Street Journal he and his wife Christine recently bought a package of Oreos and noted the twin wafer cookie was sandwiched with just a thin smear of cream. So then they went and got the double stuff Oreos and decided to test it. They usually skip the double stuff because there's too much cream. But they went looking and he goes, here we go. That's a regular Oreo, Ransonette said. He's claiming the Oreo people are putting regular Oreos in the double stuff. And they tested it, 6% less cream, according to these guys. Pat 40, what do you think of all this? Shrinkflation and ain't enough cream in the double stuff? I had no idea.
Yeah, that's a high crime there. Because like the double stuff, when that came along, was a true quality of life improvement when I was a kid.
Double stuff.
Like, yeah, I wasn't a big Oreo guy because I liked the cream more than the chocolate cookies. And then when the double stuff came, it was like, oh, now we're talking. Now we're really going. And now if they've reneged on that, I mean, how can we even trust in America?
Yeah, what next, right? What next?
Yeah. They're taking things from us.
Of course, this story originates from Louisiana, right? Of course, yes. Yeah, nothing else better to do than go start comparing Oreos in your free time.
Great moments, great developments of Pat 40's life. The internet. Yeah. Cell phones, double stuff Oreos.
Double stuff, man. It's huge. Seminal moment. Seminal.
Mondelez, the Chicago-based maker of the popular cookie sandwich, told the Journal it's tried a number of strategies recently to offset the rising cost of cocoa and sugar. Everyone's passing the buck. Shrinking packaging sizes, they admit, but they deny skimping on the cream filling. We would be shooting ourselves in the foot if we would start to play around with the quality. Sure. Are we having hearings? Did you say your wife was covering this stuff? This is, I am now, I'm all about
this.
Yeah,
I think they were. I think there was a hearing. I believe so. Yeah. 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 We don't have much else going on, Dan, you know, so there's not a whole lot of going on in the world for Congress to deal with. So might as well look into the double stuffed Oreos. Yeah. You know?
I mean, I'm looking at a TikTok where a guy opens a package and shows. I got to say, it's been a minute. Double stuff Oreos not on our regular shopping list, but this guy is open. I mean, this is not double stuff what he's got in there.
No, this is America's great shame. We need to get on this.
Well, look, we got Reggie, his Heisman back.
Yeah. A pod investigation.
We need to get our double stuff back.
Make double stuff Oreos great again. That's it. All right. I don't think we need to. I think we're all in agreement. Senator Casey, good work. That's what we need. All right. Friday morning, draft pod will be out. We'll react to all the first round picks, do our college memories. It'll be a raucous show as usual. Hope you all enjoy the draft, and we will talk to you later.